You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Thursday, the 18th of June. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, we'll chat to Chantal Marks. We're starting to see some trading updates on the JSE that include a lockdown period. We're going to chat to Gary Boyson. We've got the hard question for him. When do we sell? And then we're going to chat to FlySafair's CEO on taking off again this week. What's the experience like? What's the demand like? How's it all working? Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Aspen shares summit to highest level since 2018. Remember, we spoke to Nick Kuntzer and that about a month ago, and he said, yep, he did like it. Business day, restaurants and hairdressers to reopen as Ramaphosa eases lockdown restrictions. Morning markets, the S&P 500 was off 0.4%. Again, bucking the trend, NASDAQ up 0.2%. Asia is red, Sydney down 0.8%, Tokyo off 0.5%. Commodities mostly red, gold is flat and palladium the exception as it trades just over 1% higher. The rand against dollar 17.21 and top 40 opening call looking for about a 0.4% red opening.
MoneyWeb Now on the money.
Chantal Mark, appreciate your time. I suppose first let's kick off with the announcement from the president last night, opening a bunch more of the country, restaurants, hairdressers, some conferencing and the like. Rough for the pandemic, good for the economy, getting a little more sort of economic activity going, particularly in the leisure industry, healthcare industry, which has been, home care, really under pressure.
Yeah, absolutely. I think government is also struggling to support employees in those sectors because the leisure industry, and particularly when you look at restaurants and hotels, really employ a lot of people. It's a labor-intensive type of environment. And if these guys are not working, then they become government's problem ultimately. Yeah. So, you need to at some point address this issue. And I think that some of them make more sense than others. But this has been kind of a trend in lockdown regulations over the last 2 months.
Yeah, and we're not the US. We don't have $1 trillion lying around for infrastructure. Two updates yesterday that struck me, Itatal and Massmart. What interests me around them is the results we've been seeing were all to February and March, which is nice, but lockdown started end of March. We're now starting to see trading updates to end of June, and that is including lockdown period. And truthfully, I suppose, it's showing us what we expected is that lockdown revenues just absolutely collapsed to varying degrees. But man, it is hurting listed companies, truthfully unlisted as well.
Yeah, particularly companies like Massmart and Itatal, who are more in the kind of discretionary, big ticket item part of the market. So Massmart, for example, you wouldn't have been able to buy TVs and washing machines during the hard lockdown. For 2 months, you weren't able to buy any alcohol, which is also quite a big chunk of their sales. Didn't know what a big chunk of their sales were, but they kind of explained it. It ended up being about 4.5% of first half sales last year was alcohol for Massmart. So it makes a big difference. And I think for Itatal, building industry was at an absolute standstill. And one of the interesting things that I picked up from that update was that Itatal Retail, which is kind of its upper-end retailer, as opposed to CTM, really struggling because people at the upper end are not making any additions to their homes. They're probably thinking about, should I still be around in a couple of years' time? And that market just seems very, very soggy, which is quite worrying because that's an area of the market that's been supporting the South African economy for years.
And I also can't help suspecting that a lot of the tile industry, which would go into, for example, shopping centres, for example, hotels refurbishing and the like, that's going to get put on hold as that those industries come out of the lockdown and the pandemic, and we're going to see, you know, soggy sales into industry probably for a couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. I think thankfully Italtal is quite well diversified. They're also quite vertically integrated, which means that they can kind of steal margin a little bit, and they are in a very strong cash position. This company in itself isn't particularly negative when you look at their outlook statement. So we might sound very negative, but They say they're cautiously optimistic regarding improved trading and continued solid cash flows going forward, which means that they are not too negative about the future. But I guess if you've got a very strong balance sheet and almost no debt, you can afford to be a little bit more optimistic than the rest.
That's a great point. And also an incredibly well-run business. Let's not park that aside either. Interesting update from Aspen yesterday. A drug out of the UK. I've tried dexamethasone, which apparently can help combat severe cases of COVID-19. Been approved by the NHS. Aspen has rights to it. The stock was up 9%. Aspen's been doing very well. I spoke to Nick Kuntz about it a while ago. Might have mentioned it with you as well. Back at 18-month highs and well-positioned as opposed to some of the other healthcare, most notably hospital stocks in the space.
Yeah, pharmaceutical companies have benefited a lot more from the COVID-19 outbreak scenario than hospital groups. Hospital groups are under pressure because they have to probably start taking COVID-19 cases at lower margins because they're being compensated by the state. So for that reason, you won't want to be in healthcare stocks or in hospital groups right now. Pharmaceuticals, though, are quite interesting. Some of them have quite big over-the-counter portfolios, Aspen being one of them, Adcock Ingram being one of them internationally, a Johnson & Johnson, and people are really stressed out about their health. So they're taking quite good care of themselves and they're stocking up on medication. In Aspen's case, they are benefiting from the COVID-19 outbreak because of increased demand for their anesthetics portfolio, as well as now for this steroid, which came a little bit left off field. I think ultimately what it means for the outbreak, not really that much, because only very ill people will be receiving it, and it won't necessarily curb infection rates. It might just curb death rates, but these people will still have to be hospitalized and they'll still have to be ventilated. For Aspen, definitely a positive. They said that they actually manufacture and distribute it in a number of countries. So very positive for them. And it was also positive for Ascendas Health.
Yeah, Ascendas picking up as well. We'll leave that there. Chantal Marks, Head of Research, F&B Wealth and Investment. Always appreciate our chats in the early morning.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Gary Boyson, he's a portfolio manager at Rand Swiss. Gary, morning. Thanks for your time. I got you on this morning, truthfully, for the very hard question. And the question is simply, you know, it's been all over my Twitter feed, particularly around Sasol, but truthfully, more broadly in a market run. But even if we step aside from a market under a pandemic scenario, and the question is, when do we sell? I suppose, to a fair degree, it depends on why we bought. But I know as an investor and even as a trader that when to sell question is frankly massively difficult but crucially important.
No, absolutely. You certainly lumped me with a difficult question. I put a lot of thought into today's answer. And I think you're 100% right. It comes down to who you are and why you bought in the first place. So you know, I think the first thing you've really got to do is decide, are you a trader or are you an investor? If you are a trader, let's say you're a day trader, I mean, the time to sell is pretty clear. You know, you need to be out of the market before the end of the day. Mm-hmm. You know, don't hold positions overnight. If you're a longer-term investor, it becomes a lot more difficult. And if you look at what's happening in the world today, I suppose you've got this, you know, these kind of competing forces. So you've got what most people are considering a very, very overvalued share market. And then you've got, on the other hand, you know, just like incredible performance, but you know, very, very difficult economic situation that we're trying to deal with. So, you know, I suppose the simple answer from a professional point of view is that you try and sell when a stock price is above its intrinsic value, you know, you would buy it when it falls below its intrinsic value. So you kind of for present value, you know, you look at the discounted, at least the present value of discounted future cash flows. The problem is that doesn't really answer the question, because if you look at what's happened, certainly in 2020, we've seen that, you know, if you compare that kind of value style of investing to a growth style of investing, a growth has just massively outperformed, and it hasn't worked. So that kind of brought me back to this George Soros quote, which is saying, when you see a bubble forming, you rush in, you know, he rushes in to buy, adding fuel to the fire. So it almost comes to the situation that we're in now, where we kind of know that stock is very expensive, but it doesn't immediately lend itself to being sold. And that for me comes down to kind of, you know, again, if you're a retail investor, if you're someone that, you know, is investing for the longer term, you know, the idea of trying to work out when to sell is actually, it's an idea of trying to time the market. And that generally is a bad idea for retail investors. It's actually better to try and stay in the market, even if you think the market is overvalued. You kind of stay with the bubble, because it's easier for you to, you know, it's more difficult for you to try and time a re-entry from sitting on the outside than just to kind of take the run up in the irrationality. So I'm going to try and give you some actionable points to take away from this. So I think for a retail investor, probably the best time to sell would be, one, when your portfolio becomes unbalanced. So if I look at it, you know, if you're holding Amazon and you've got a whole lot of, you know, oil stocks, for example, the chances are that your portfolio will at some point become unbalanced. Now, if you look at yourself, you've got to consider, why are you investing? What is the risk to you holding this combination of stocks? Now, if Amazon is suddenly making up, let's say, 25% of your portfolio, I think you are justified in selling down that position to bring you back in line with the general position that you want to be in. You want to kind of try and create a portfolio that matches the risk that you're willing to take. Having 25% in one company probably doesn't match many people's risk profile. So that should be my first reason to sell. I'd say that the next reason to sell is potentially a liquidity event as well. So if you know, the nice thing about, I suppose, owning shares directly is that, you know, you're not locked, like often if you're holding a direct stock portfolio, you're not locked into markets in the same way that you are when you're investing via like a Reg 28 portfolio or other retirement products. That means that you can sell shares to kind of deal with the things in life. These days, global standards are really T+3, which means that you can essentially sell shares and have cash 3 days later. Now, that's not like evident in many, well, that's not available in many, many types of investment products. So that for me would be another reason to sell. I think my final reason to sell would be, you know, for tax purposes as well. If you're going through, especially given 2020, and you're sitting in a position where potentially you're earning a lot lower income than you usually do, and your tax rate has actually dropped, I would say that is another justifiable reason to sell shares, to kind of lock in some of the capital gains that you've generated by holding shares, and use a low tax year essentially to kind of realize some of that TGP just at an appropriate time. Of course, then I would still be recommending redeploying into stocks after that, because, you know, you should be again looking at your asset allocation and deciding from a personal point of view how much equity exposure should you have at any one time.
I love it. Unbalanced portfolio, liquidity event, taxed purposes, and give Gary the hard question, and he comes with three crisp answers. Gary Boyson, portfolio manager at Rand Swiss, really appreciate your time this morning and your time overnight as you came up with a awesome answer. Thank you.
MoneyWeb Now on the Money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Omar Conradi, CEO at Fly Safair. Omar, appreciate your time this morning. You restarted operations on Monday after, what, almost 10 weeks of no operations. How's that experience been? What's it like for passengers on crew and crews on these initial flights in the first couple of days? It must be a little surreal being back in the air, a little surreal with all the protective processes in place.
Yeah, it was actually 80 days since our last flight until Monday when we started again. So it felt a little bit like starting the airline again from scratch and our own little SpaceX launch on Monday. The processes at the airport are actually, I think they've settled down and people know what to do. It takes a little bit longer to get through the process, especially to get into the airport, because you need to produce your letter from your work to say that you're traveling from work for work. And if you haven't completed the health questionnaire before you arrive at the airport, then you have to complete that when you get to the airport. Once you get into the airport itself, it's actually, I think, much more pleasant to travel at this stage because you've got the airport for yourself. You know, there's only about 5% of the traffic that normally went through the airports is going through the airport at the moment. So it's actually a pleasant experience with lots of space for yourself.
Yeah, that's a great point. No more fighting through the crowds and trolleys and security and rolling suitcases, etc. What's your demand been? I imagine some pent-up demand in the first couple of days, particularly Monday, people who haven't travelled in the last 80 days and wanted to. How's it been in the first couple of days? How do you expect it sort of in the weeks ahead?
So there was a bit of a surge in demand on Monday. Like you say, I think a lot of people that needed to get to certain places where they haven't been able to get to for a while. But the demand is incredibly low. Like I just mentioned, even though the demand was better the first 2 days compared to what we're seeing in terms of the forward bookings, mm-hmm. It is still only a fraction of what went through the airport last year, only 5% of the total traffic. So the demand is incredibly low. In fact, I know many of the other carriers have started cancelling flights again, and we've actually done the same. We've started removing some of the frequencies so that we don't fly so empty.
In essence, I mean, this is an industry which you're back in the air, but you know, you're talking 5%. I mean, this is almost, you know, back in the day when you know a peak period would almost be a rounding error. It's still tough out there. This is, in many senses, just providing an essential service, keeping your planes ticking over and keeping your staffing ticking over to a degree.
Yeah, so look, I mean, we are still making massive losses at these levels. I mean, only 5% of what we operated before. But we couldn't cut really any of our costs. So we still have all the massive overheads, all the infrastructure, all the aircraft that we need to pay for. So, but look, we're happy that we're flying again at least, and we can start ticking over. And, you know, it's not good for the aeroplanes to stand that long. We have to keep the crew current because mm-hmm. they all need to be trained and they need licenses and stuff like that. So for us, being on the ground is much worse than even flying a little bit. But we're still making massive losses, and not just us, all the airlines. I mean, some of them aren't even flying yet. Look, it's we're all going to run out of cash at some point. So we just hope that you know, the reasons for travel are expanded soon, so that there's a little bit more demand, so that we can hopefully see some more aircraft in the air soon.
Yeah, and you make a great point. It's a tough industry. Globally, it's a tough industry. Locally, we have 3 airlines in one form or other of business rescue. Government support, I mean, and I'm parking aside the government airlines, but support to fly SAFE through things such as the UIF and TERS and the like. Have you been able to access any of that to not resolve the cash flow crisis, but to sort of help the cash flow, particularly around staffing and salaries?
So unfortunately, with our turnover being so high, most of the cut-offs for the assistance by government being sort of in the region of less than 300 million and stuff like that, we don't qualify for any of the relief funds. Mm-hmm. The only thing we did qualify for was the TERS UIF, you know, for our staff that we could claim. Look, across the world, there's been a lot of assistance to airlines, especially in terms of, you know, the taxes and the fees that government charges to the airlines. We haven't seen any of that in South Africa yet. So we're really hoping that they would. The president alluded to the fact last night that he had to open up restaurants because there's no relief for them. You know, there's no relief for the airline industry and the tourism industry. It's an industry really on its knees at this stage.
Yeah, that's a great point. And tourism is one of these industries which over the last couple of decades has become more and more significant for countries around the world, countries in Europe, countries in Africa, South Africa included. And it's almost in a sense, it's critical. Not critical that maybe we need a state airline, but we need aeroplanes in our sky. That is important. Omar Conradi, CEO at SAFE, really appreciate your time this morning. That's it for the show today. You'll find us live every morning, 6:30 a.m. at moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app. The podcast available in all good podcast catchers from 7 a.m. Chat to us on the social medias, Facebook and Twitter. Use the hashtag MoneyWebNow. My thanks to you for listening. My thanks to our guests, to my producer, Kaldora, and happy birthday to her, and sound engineer, Eddie. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.